everybody back? Is everybody in? Everybody in. Everybody in. Ceremony is about to begin. Let me tell you about heartache and the laws of God. Then they bring creation and the feeling of Kim coming all back again. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Charmony Podcast. It's Kenneth Allen coming back from the underground. I have been under the knife. My brain has been exposed to the outer environments, and I come back to tell you the tale. The water is fine. Yeah, so after that first podcast, I had a couple other things happen, and I've spoken with the doctors, and everything was a go, and went in for surgery this November. Went under for a 10-hour surgery, and I'm speaking to you from MedSurg right now. I got out of ICU yesterday. I'm in here for another day or two until they see that the packing that's holding my skull in place is indeed doing that. The matrix or the substrate, the fat and fascia that they patched against my dura mater in my brain is holding. There's no CSF leaking through. And when that's all been a go, then they allow me to leave. And I am in exceptionally good health. I cannot believe that I'm feeling this good. I can't believe that I'm this coherent and that I made it through in the first place. I got my eyes, I got my brain, and they were able to save some of my olfactory nerve on the left side. So they believe in time I will be able to smell again, which is an unbelievable blessing. So how's everybody else doing out there? You had a bad day? You can have worse, and you get through that shit just as fucking easy as hot apple pie a la mode, motherfucker. That's what I'm feeling like right now. Big hot apple pie a la mode smelling with cinnamon crumble. They just pumped me full of Dilaudid because the pain is such that it feels there's a knife in the back of my right eye. Here's what they did. Giant tumor in the back of my right sinus, set right between all of the sinuses where they would drain down into the, you know, down into the mouth and the palate, except for a big 3 centimeter by 5 centimeter stacked up esthesio neuroblastoma, big old olfactory nerve tumor, like kind of in a pillar shape in the shape of like Minnesota. And then there was a little arm that went towards my right eyeball. It went into the orbital socket. It had cracked the bone there. It went back up. It's a cranial nerve, as you all know, on old Olympics towering tops. Olfactory nerve ran up to the cranium and was running back towards my brain. It was sitting on the dura mater. The leathery coating covering of the brain was resting on top of the tumor. And they had to go in, take a look at this damn thing, lift up the brain from it to see if it sticks to the dura mater in the tumor, which means that the cells have had contact and started to, you know, grow together. They lifted it up. There was no adhesion. Again, amazing. They cut off that flap of the leather coating around the brain and then patched it up with some of the fat tissue that they got. They harvested from my left thigh. So I have a nice little square, like a Johnny Mnemonics type little scar I'll have there for the rest of my life. Do you believe that? I just referenced Johnny Mnemonic. Don't even fuck around, dude. People would probably throw a Neo reference in there. I go Johnny Neo Monic. And then they did that surgery. They were able to go all the way through to get that through my nose to go to my brain. And they were able to go up through my nose, make a sharp right angle, go into the eye, scrape off some of the affected tissue of the medius rectus muscle in the eye. It sounds a lot dirtier than it is. And the superior rectus, I believe those are the two muscles that the tumor was touching. And then there was a small amount that was touching my actual eyeball. So they abraded that spot. And they found, as with everywhere else, knowing the margins were all clear. So I was able to keep my eyeball, which was a really I was just thinking I was going to come out of this not being able to be a fireman again, you know? Now, let alone just not being able to see out of that eye. So imagine how elated I was when I awoke and I could see in stereo. And it was a, like I said, 10-hour surgery, all done through the nose. And I must have been tied down because I woke up and it was like every muscle in my body was sore, probably from being tensed. I don't remember any of it. But like all the insertion points, like my biceps are, my IT band is just rigid with pain and soreness. But whatever, small price to pay. How's everybody doing out there? By the way, remember, Traumedy Podcast can be found at www.traumedypodcast.com and iTunes and Stitcher, and it looks like we're back on iTunes in full effect. If anybody knows how to get an image onto iTunes, let me know. I'm getting tired of this. I'm going to have plenty of downtime in the next few weeks to figure this shit out, but I just want everything to look good. Tell your friends, tell your family the cancer series is in full effect. Hey, guys, girls, you never know how you get this shit. Obviously, I'm thinking it was from the job because we're exposed to so much stuff, but it's not your fault sometimes. So don't feel bad. Don't get down on yourselves. Just go after and attack this shit, okay? Like your Uncle Cabo. And anyway, I promised you one from the hospital, and I wanted to give you one. So here I am in mid-surge after ICU. I wanted to give you a couple of things that I noticed about what makes you feel professional, or what makes you feel like you're being taken care of here. The doctors listen to you. They follow up on questions that you have. If you have a question about the medication, I didn't want to take heparin after a couple of days because I was up and walking around. He went, "You're right, you don't need it. Get rid of it. You don't have to take it." I was worried about taking Decadron, which is a steroid. And I said, "I don't know if I need all of this." And they said, "Yeah, you probably don't. Let's just take a look and see. Do you want to taper off of it?" I said, "I'd like to." And he says, "Okay, that sounds good. Let's work on a program to do that." And they've just immediately started tapering that off. I asked to change my IV infusion of antibiotics, which was occurring routinely at 3 in the morning, which basically meant I'd awake from some kind of trance-like state at 3 sharp, and a nurse would just start pumping me full of, you know, vancomycin, and I wouldn't sleep for the rest of the day because it's just, I'm a light sleeper, and it's weird. And they said, "Oh, that's ridiculous. We'll just give it to you at 12, and then it's 6 in the morning." So here we are. This is about 11:30 at night, and I'm just starting my infusion of vancomycin. So the doctors actually listen and respond to you. It's amazing. The other thing is just the nurses. You click the call button, and they're right there. "What can I do? What do you need? What can I help you with?" They come over, and they actually clean the alcohol ports every time they give you a medication, every time they hook up a pony bag to something else. They wear gloves when they pick up your food. They act professional, and they touch you. They come over and hold your hand when they talk to you, put their hand on your shoulder. This shit that bedside manner in a way that I have never brought outside of off the hospitals to the streets, that can be used in many, many more ways and so many more communicable ways to my patients that I didn't even just think about because I had not been exposed to this. So I've been thinking about, you know, your first formative years as a medic. And you go out and you're nervous and you're scared and you first identify with the salty guy who's been out there 5-7 years. And they're kind of just, nothing's a big deal because they can run this thing. They're Iceman. They're cool as fucking, you know, cool Aunt Luke. Chilled gold. And I know, just let it go. It wasn't good. And then you kind of get to this point where you're just salty dog and you don't really care. And actually, you're not cool. You're bored and you're disenfranchised about the whole thing. And then what happens to those medics? Well, later in life, then their family starts to fail. Their health starts to fail. Their own health starts to fail. and they see the hospital care, and then they get exposed to that kind of life. And I hope that they get a chance to see the professionalism in the hospital, and that renews their compassion for the streets to go out there and do that. Because, like, I'm looking at this and I'm going, okay, I know I'm going to swing this. Like, I'm holding hands, I'm talking to people, like, straight up in their, like, just one-on-one with everybody, because it makes all the difference in the world to the patient's point of view. It makes all of my ease. It just sinks in. It's incredible. And it's important. It's important. It's probably the most important kind of care you can give. The drugs, the electricity, everything else is secondary to getting that patient ready for the treatment that's about to occur. I mean, you know, we throw in ET tubes in the field, and it's a big chaotic mess. And we go, yeah, make sure that's a sterile ET tube that goes in their throat. And we go, yeah, we sure. And okay, well, I mean, if we got a suction a couple times, we will. Okay, and maybe that tube hits the ground and you kind of wipe it off, and the second time you put it in, you know, I've heard these things go on all the time. Well, guess what? That tube may stay in that person for a week. Whatever shit it picked up on the ground from your hands that were touching the carpet that went on the tube that went into the throat, whatever is on that tube will be growing in that person within a day. And why on earth would a good tube be pulled? Why would they pull an IV line if they're a bad stick and the patient's comatose and they have that line and they need to use it for the next day or two and the tube works? They're going to leave it in. And whatever you didn't do to keep that clean and perfect is going to damage that patient, okay? Whatever germs get on that tube, they're going to start growing in the lungs. And you know the big issue of hospital care is infection and pneumonia. So we really have to be thinking in a future tense with all the treatment that we do immediately. Got to be thinking that way. If I'm good enough to run these calls and run them smoothly for the moment, then I should be forecasting what could go on in the future with these patients and start my care in a predictable methodology that will minimize any risks in the future. And that only comes by seeing this, seeing what the continuum of care is, and actually caring enough to do it, change it. It really comes down to just being impressed by the caregivers that I've seen around here and how personable and professional they are. And I'm just blown away by everything here. What else? It's chaotic. It's a bit of a morgue feel. It's a bit of a mental hospital, mental institution type feeling with the night when everything goes out and all you can see is kind of that moss green computer screen light. And taupe walls. And I said, you know, you hear all the machines bleep, bloop, blopping, like from different room to room. Like they're like wolves in the country. How, you know, wolves answer each other's howls, except these little machines answer each other's beeps and bops. If that's not enough to drive you crazy, it's just always somebody shouting in the other room. This is where, when I come and I drop my patients off and give them the big salute and say good luck with all that, they all get filtered here. So I'm spending a couple nights with the people that I usually drop off and go, God bless you nurses for doing that job. And I actually have to, I see what they have to go through. Ooh, baby. I mean, I don't want none of that sugar. What? I don't want that. I want some sugar. So, anyway, what's good is that, you know, I'm able to just kind of zone out, put an ice pack on my head, let any kind of narcotic that I need kind of just Calgon take me away, and write about this and talk about it for posterity. And it's good, though. I want you to know that you can get through anything. I just fucking got lucky. So, I mean, I just keep thinking, if I hadn't gotten that bloody nose, I'd still be sitting at the firehouse probably working right now, thinking I had a chronic nasal infection, which I always have had. I've always had nasal problems. And I probably wouldn't have found it until I started getting severe headaches or double vision, in which case it would probably have been too late to save my eye or my body. So, as far as thinking that you're in a bad spot, I could be in a worse spot. I feel like I'm in a very lucky spot. One last thing. It always takes some bullshit thing like this to change your life. And I keep trying to figure out why that is. It's not bullshit, but what I mean is, why does it take some life-threatening, life-altering thing to make you alter your life? Maybe just because you get too caught up in, I get too caught up in habit. And you don't want to change, or you don't think you know how, or you don't think you can. I know I can, because I have changed. But like, I just feel like this word cancer is this thing that people... It was like a taboo word that you didn't want to say because you were afraid you would attract it and it would come sniffing towards you, ironically. And and then you get it and you go, well, fuck, I'm not supposed to have this. I'm a healthy guy. In fact, I fought this thing off faster than anybody thought I could, and isolated it, you know. But now that I have it, it just goes, okay, fucker, now you have it. Now you had it. Now you're getting treatment for it. What else do you want to change about your life? Now that you've been afraid to look this in the eye, look everything in the eye and say, all right, I don't want you anymore in my life. I want you in my life. What would we be like with you in my life? Can we make this sort of situation? Can I start growing and becoming a better person in this way? And the answer is always yes, but like, it's like you're this little caveman. I was like this guy fucking following signs and reading chicken guts and fucking... Does that make sense? Trying to read the signs as to what I was going to become rather than just become what I want to become and saying fuck all that, anything else that stands in my way. And then there's also just the... So, I guess the point is, shouldn't have waited this long to start going after what I truly, truly love, which is this podcast and interviewing and talking and journalistically-lizing the world, which is a word that I'm making up because Trump does it and I can do it too. So we're going to just keep doing this full time. I'm going to have as much fun as I can with this and interview as many cool people as I can and monetize this shit and fucking rock and roll to my jock and soul. And show everybody how the world runs and works. And that's about what I do. What do you do? Hi, how are you? How are you out there in the old internet land? You having fun? Have you found that job yet? Have you found that job that you just go, you know what? It may not pay the most. I may not look as cool. I may not be as powerful as Joe Blow or Rob Lowe or whoever, Jenny Lowe. But who cares? Because it's fucking me. And when people look at that, they go, oh yeah, that's totally Kenneth's gig. I get it. That works for him. Or like, I could just go, I don't care what you think. Like, this is what I do well. This is my jam. It's my wheelhouse. And it may not be the funniest. I may not be the most informed, but God damn it, I'm going to go after this thing with college professoral try. I'm going to do this. Just going to do it. And bring along the friends. You want to come along? Just come along. Just come along. I guarantee you're going to have fun on this ride. Okay, what's next for me? What's next for me is now few weeks of rest and respite, which means I'm going to be twiddling my thumbs, losing my mind, trying to find something to do. I'm not capable of working out because, as I said, there's some spackle holding my skull and my brain in place. And anytime I really grunt and increase pressure there, I run the risk of blowing the smart part of my head out of the dumb lower part. And I don't want to do that. So I have to take it easy, which means probably a lot of downtime and a lot of software rebooting in my brain, meaning calculating how to make huge amounts of success, money, power, and lord it over all of you and have you all worship me. And you know that's not what I mean. What I mean is finding a way to just stop beating my head against a wall and do more with my life. Really monetize this thing and get you guys an enjoyable podcast. Get it fun and informative. You know, like a Joe Rogan experience. Like something fun like that. Like This American Life or... I don't know. I like Brian Callen's show. I think that's incredible. I don't know if he's funny as Callen, but... I'd love to do something like that. Just interview interesting, fun people. Get it on a broader scope. Do what I was doing before. And if you like that idea, stick along. Come on. Come along the ride. Be part of the Ivy League. Be part of the Dramedy Podcast Ivy League. It's a great name for the listeners. Like intravenous, right? I'll make some cool shirts. You can buy them. You'll love them. Send me your pictures. It'd be funny. And that's it. And that's it. And make some cool programs. I keep talking about making those, but I haven't. But guess I'll have some downtime to do that now. Between that, and then I do radiation, and that should be another 4 to 6 weeks. And then we'll see after that. That'll probably be end of February, March. Hopefully I'll be working out. Hopefully I still got my vision and my... hopefully I still live. That's it. I hope there's nothing metastasized. Also that I just follow through on this. That's what it comes down to. I just really want to follow through on this and just really start strong and stay on this strong. You know, I had my high school reunion the Sunday, 4 days before my surgery. And it was really great seeing all of these people that I hadn't seen in 20 years, some of them. 20 years. Some of them, I mean, they look great. I was amazed. And of course, you know, I was really amazed. And you see these people that I hadn't seen in 20 years. Not only that, I just freaked out thinking this isn't recording. Let me just see. Thank God it is. Okay. And I see guys, I go, man, how have you been? You know? And they're like, you know what? I got really lucky. I'm doing this. I'm importing and exporting so-and-so. I don't want to point too many things out. And it was a guy that never really hung out with in high school, kind of, you know, a bit of an outsider. And he's just, and you look and I'm like, oh, you're fucking a billionaire right now, aren't you? And he goes, hey, man, I got really lucky. He's looking at this guy and he goes, fucking right on, man. Right fucking on, dude. You went after it. You got maybe a bum, not even a bum lead, but you didn't have anything to prove in high school. You were doing your own thing. Didn't matter what, you know, you just did your own thing. And you struck on something that worked for you and you capitalized on it after into college, into your private sector. And it fucking worked because you didn't give a shit about what other people were saying, what other people were doing, whatever fads there were. Whatever they told you what market to get into. You just went, I like this. How do I get this to work for me? And it worked. Because it's a dream to do it. And if it's really a dream, you'll find a way to tweak your life around that dream to make it come true. It may not look the way you thought it would, but it will feel that way. And that's how I look at this stuff. And it may not look like I thought it would, but it's going to feel that way in the end, especially if it comes down to just having people around to have enjoy this ride, to have listenership and to have people going, right on, man, I fucking love that episode. Hey, how about having this guy on? And I go, great, I'm going to go find that guy or that woman. go on that mission to go find and discover knowledge and cool people, because it's really all we got. And then also meeting those cool people, okay? Understanding what their understanding of life is, getting that out to people to inspire them. But then it's my job to allow them to express and to produce the best product, either a podcast or a lecture or a music concert or whatever, or to create a song about whatever it is, but about that person or about that thought, and for me to express it as well, as perfectly, and as pure as I can. Because that's the meditative process that makes you feel alive. Okay? Somebody in my communal bathroom right now. I think I just blew his mind because he dropped his toothbrush right out of his mouth. He also could have some serious problems going on. But what I'm saying is, chaplain came in today and she said, would you like communion, or would you, you know, is there any prayers I could say for you, or what do you believe? Are you, so, you know, I was raised Catholic. I consider myself just kind of a spiritual person, okay? And she's like, okay, that's great. I said, you know, this is so fucking, all right, I'm going to say it. I said, you know, I just believe in is just communion in all senses of the word, just communion. This is so hippie. I can't believe I'm saying this. But, just the communion with somebody. A hug is a communion. Like, you're sharing the moment with somebody for whatever it is. The Holy Host is, you're not supposed to, don't think it's Christ's blood, whatever you want, or body. It's just, you guys are participating in this together. Look around and enjoy that. It should be an enjoyable moment of familyness, of togetherness, of actually love, too. I'm not into that black mass shit where you get together and you commune to fucking kill. So I don't think that's right. But I guess maybe there are some fucking dark places where that needs to happen too. War, for sure. But I don't think it should be celebrated. I don't think it should be deitized. I think you should pray to a god of death. I think you should understand that death must occur because life occurs. This is getting dark as fuck. But what I'm saying is communion with your fellow people is the best. And the best way that can happen is somebody stands up and demonstrates it alone in front of a group, in front of a mass. And it inspires everyone because they understand it. They see and they can feel the emotion. And that sparks a commonality between everyone. And everybody can identify with that moment and that feeling at that moment. And everybody's one. And you're speaking in tongues. And that's really what performance is all about. That's what art, to me, is all about. It's the ability to express to every human being an emotion and a thought. Whether it's, you know, beauty or clarity or, you know, whatever it is. It's just a moment of truth suspended. And the better the art is, the longer you can suspend that and show that to everyone. And that's pretty much my goal. Anyway, for tomorrow, that's my goal coming up here, is to try and make that happen every day. Every day, to try and work towards that more perfect communion with everyone, and don't hurt people along the way. Fuck them, you know. Unless that's their game, they want to play the hurt game. Then they want to play it, and you want to as well. Fucking play the hurt game. I don't know. Right now, my pain's about a 4 by my eye. I have to just keep it closed because. What they have, I didn't tell you, was they literally took a Foley cath and ran it up my nostril behind my eye up against the back of my cranium and inflated it to keep everything in place as the plaster, for lack of a better term, seals and hardens. So it's been up there for 5 days now. 4 days. And then tomorrow they're going to deflate the catheter line and withdraw that, and then withdraw the packing from the left side. So my head's been under an extreme amount of increased pressure. So because of that, my right eye is a little bit wonky because it's got a press. It's being pressed against from the inside more than usual. So if I swivel my eyes to look around, it causes a lot of pain. I didn't realize how much was in there until the other intern came over the other day and said, well, let me just take a little bit out. And she knocked out 10 cc's, and it felt like my entire face shrunk about 3 inches, my whole head. It was a semi-religious experience, and it was fucking awesome. And now I said, well, how much is left? She's like, well, 15 more cc's, which is going to come out fucking tomorrow, I hope, because I can't imagine what I'm going to feel like after that. My balloon head will be back to Earth, and hopefully the healing can begin. Hopefully there's no cracks and leaks, and I get to trek back to the Bay Area and start healing. And I hope you trek back with me to the Bay Area. We enjoy ourselves. You learn a little bit. You laugh. You turn me on to some interesting people to talk to. And I turn you on to the same. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I bid you all adieu. Remember, hey, if you got it, use it. It's Ken Allen saying, tell your friends, tell your family. Everything's a tragedy. Bye-bye, Al. Love you.